You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
USB microphones and headphones provided by CAD Audio. CAD Audio, expression through innovation.
Forgive the interruption, but I believe this requires your attention.
Meanwhile, at the above-ground underwater suborbital volcano lair...
This is urgent. We need a response team.
We're already putting together the best man.
With all due respect, sir, so am I.
I have a plan.
It's a big laugh.
It's real!
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
It's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
Team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Your show about all things Marvel with Mike, Kylan, and Eric.
What a bunch of losers.
I am Groot.
That I did know.
These people may be isolated, unbalanced even, but I believe with the right push, it can be exactly what we need.
Suit up. I'm bringing the party to you.
I have indeed been uploaded, sir. We're online and ready.
And welcome to another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. It is Mike, your host. This week, it's just Kylan.
Hey.
Eric's off with his agent in training, a.k.a. his son, going over some S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy, Junior Academy entrance exams.
Yep.
For the, fifth time, maybe?
For the fifth time?
Or no, it's the fifth exam. For level 1.7 access, something like that. Furying in all his numbers. We've got the great luxury and honor of being joined by a man who's going to have 21, I think, variant covers coming out.
I believe so.
Which how he's done it is absolutely amazing. I can only be speaking of the man of 21 covers with Marvel, Mr. Michael Cho. How you doing tonight, Michael?
Doing great. Ready to geek out. Not that we haven't already geeked out already.
That's true.
You know, we haven't geeked out until you hear.
I didn't even hear that. What was that?
You didn't hear? I had to play it again.
I heard it, but I couldn't make sense of it. What it was.
Is the title track to Howard the Duck.
Oh! Dude, I wiped that from my memories when I was a kid. I saw that on opening night. That's how bad it was.
You saw it opening night?
Yeah, I had some buddies from the local comic shop who were like, we have passes. They set me, straight so far because I got to see, the last Starfighter and Red Dawn, same guys, went opening night passes. And I was like, Howard the Duck, yeah, I'll see that. And I was like, yeah, I wiped that by the time I came out of theater. So.
Sorry, Mike.
I know. I'm that one guy.
You liked it?
I loved it.
He loved it.
For what it was in the 80s.
Is it a Leia Thompson thing or is it an animatronic duck thing?
It was the Leia Thompson thing.
Okay. That's a little more understandable. Otherwise, with the duck thing, we're getting into some weird area here.
Well, the scene where she's crawling across the bed. I mean, of course, that comes out right after Carrie Fisher in the metal bikini from Return of the Jedi. That was right at the beginning of my teen. Now, I was a teenager at that point.
Right.
So.
Where's Ed right now?
trying to keep this family friendly. Oh, we get derailed so bad.
I am not going to comment at all. Oh, I was a teenager then, too. I'm just going to. No.
Well, go from Leah Thompson and that to all of a sudden seeing her in Back to the Future. It's like, oh, 50s dress is just as good.
The mom angle did get you, though. It's a little weird, but, she's, with Marty McFly and everything like that.
Oh, I thought it was weird, but, I'm not her son, so it didn't bother me.
Oh, my God! Oh!
I was trying to explain that movie, Back to the Future, to my daughter recently, because, you know, I'm a dad, you get to explain all the highlights of the cool geek stuff, and try to explain the plot, and when I got, that's the part where I had to explain, you know, like, yeah, and his mom is now starting to fall in love with him. I was like, how do I explain this without getting into some really weird territory, you know? And, you know, it's like, but it's not good that, you know, so she has to set her up, because otherwise he won't be born, and so he has to find, you know, make her fall in love with his dad, you know?
And he's Darth Vader from the planet Vulcan.
That's right. Like, classic bit.
Yes.
So, well, I guess, since we went ahead and pitched it at the beginning, 21 different variant covers?
Yes.
That happens in, what, January, February?
February. Yeah, they got me to do that, and I'm just finishing them up now.
How did they rope you into 21 covers?
It wasn't hard, actually. They had me do... Tom from Marvel contacted me and asked me to do... a variant cover for the new Avengers series that came out, that started out, and I said, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to do that. And then he said, like a week later, he said, by the way, we got this other thing, would you be interested in doing like a bunch of them? And I said, well, how many? And they said, like, oh, it'll be like 21 to 24. What, they said 20. And then I said, well, that's a lot. When does this come out? And they said January. And so being enough of a professional, I looked at my schedule and I went, dude, so that's like a lot of work. Right. And I couldn't see, because I had other stuff to do, and I said I couldn't start this until like September. And then we worked out the mathematics of it, and I was like, yeah, I could do this. I'd have to make sure I shut down everything else, you know, so that I'm only devoting my time to this. But once I figured out that I could do it, and I was like, well, this is a great opportunity for me to hit all the bases and, you know, check off a bunch of stuff on my to-do list of things I wanted to draw. So, you know, I was down with it right from the beginning.
Now, with the 21 different covers, did they give you direction of, for this one, we want something like this, for this one, we want something like that?
No, did they
just say, here's the titles you're doing, here's the story arcs going on, free range?
Yeah, well, what they wanted was, Tom contacted me and he said, here's a sample of stuff that we found of yours online, like here's an Iron Man drawing that you did, right, that's been circulating around the net or something. And they said, can you do something like this? And I said, you mean something just iconic? And they were like, yeah. And so I said, yeah, absolutely. And then after that, they just gave me reference for all the new designs, because some of these are for the newer costumes that I'm not as familiar with, being a child of like 80s Marvel, you know, and you can't draw Tony Stark in the old 80s suit, because there have been like 20 generations of armor since then. So they sent along these designs, and then they just said, you know, go at it and do what you want. And I really appreciated that, because, you know, one thing I really love is just carte blanche, you know, so I get to do, and I was like, at first I'm like a little scared, and I'm worried, you know, like, I guess I should try and make this look like everybody else's, or what the line is looking like. And then I realized, well, wait, they just asked me to do stuff my way, so I might as well just, you know, if someone gives you that opportunity, you might as well run with it, you know?
Right. So of the 21, which was the easiest for you to do, and which one was possibly the hardest for you to do?
Easiest to Spider-Man, because, like, I could draw Spider-Man in my sleep, right? And, like, you know, he's probably, like, the one I want to draw the most. And so that one came together. Like, I think I came up with a rough concept. I sat there with, like, a little pad of drawing little Spider-Man thumbnails, and I was by the time I got to like the eighth one, I was like, yeah, that one. And then that was easy to draw. And then the one that's the hardest is anything with a large group, right? Because I'm not George Perez. I can't like draw just guys on a page and still make it look decent, you know. So I'm like, oh man, if I'm gonna draw like, you know, eight guys in this team, I'm gonna have to spend a lot of time reposing these figures to make them, you know, work dynamically and move your eye around the page and everything. So it's the group shots. I try to hold them off until I did them in little batches of seven. So I try to do only like one group shot per batch.
Okay, so that means roughly three group shots then.
Yeah. The last one I did was that I'm working on now is A-Force, the one with the all female Marvel super team, which is, by the way, super cool. You know, I had a lot of fun drawing those characters. And I gotta say, like the Marvel couple costume designs. Some of them are really, like, they're awesome. Like, I was drawing Squirrel Girl, and I was like, man, this is a really fun costume to draw. And the new Scarlet Witch design is just fantastic. So,
yeah, I'm digging the Squirrel Girl line. It's just fun. It looks great.
Yeah, it's hilariously good.
Yeah.
I was looking at some of the I was looking at some of your work in preparation, because I love preparing for the show, which is just me doing what I normally do anyway. But I would like to know, because I'm that guy, will we get to see posters or prints of some of these covers? Because this is definitely mountable work.
Yeah, like when I came up with the concept for these things, I was kind of picturing them as like a cross between a paperback cover and a movie teaser poster.
Yeah,
you know, with a large iconic figure and then like a release date, you know, and a small title logo, something like that. So they're kind of designed with that kind of feel in mind. So I don't know what Marvel plans to do, if they want to release it as posters or whatnot. That would be cool. I'd be totally for that.
Now, is this something, these covers, if you want to use them for product at conventions, they're going to allow you to use, or are you...
I don't know. I'd have to run that by them. Like my general policy is, if it's anything that I've done for work for hire, I don't do that, right? Uh-huh. Because the copyright belongs to them. If I drew that for myself and it was never published and they never, you know, I didn't sign a contract for it, but just something I did as for fun, I would make it and I wouldn't have a problem with it. But in this case, I would probably have to ask for, you know, explicit permission.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to run into that gray area. You know,
right.
Do something I shouldn't be doing. So,
with some of the characters that you were not as familiar with, how did you come up with a concept for that character? Because it seems like you, well, like you said, with Spider-Man, you know Spider-Man, and you kind of you had the image and you had the feel in your head, and it seems like each cover is sort of evoking maybe the spirit of the character. So, yeah. How did you do that with the character that you weren't as familiar with?
Miss Marvel, right? Which is a newer Marvel character that I wasn't familiar with. I knew of her existence, but I didn't know what she was about.
Right.
I did a lot of research and, you know, just sort of, I read a few issues and then I tried to figure out what the appeal of this book is and then, you know, like what characteristics I should be stressing, you know, strong, independent, you know, teen girl, you know, who is sort of wide-eyed, new at the superhero game, but, you know, is self-assured. So
right.
That's sort of the kind of thing. So it's just research. I also asked some geeky friends of mine who were like, you know, so, you know, what's up with this? And then they would go like, oh, that book's awesome, dude. You know, she does this and this and this, and, you know, you should really read this arc and so forth. So, you know, it was nice to get some pointers.
Tap your resources, right?
Like Squirrel Girl, perfect example. Yeah. My buddy Steve, who's an illustrator as well, he was like, that's an amazing book. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to read some. So I bought a few issues and I was like, I'm totally hooked. This is an awesome book.
Squirrel Girl is one of those characters that I'm so glad that she has, basically that she's gotten the popularity that she's gotten, and it's not an ironic kind of popularity, is the fact that people actually are drawn to her.
Yeah.
I enjoy that, and it's cool to hear other artists, you know, actually be excited about getting to, like in your case, you get to draw her, and you get to be a part of, you know, your part in her, bringing her to the masses, you know?
Yeah, and also awesome. For me, there's extra geek cred in that it's she's a Steve Ditko creation. So I was like,
that's true.
I was talking with a buddy of mine, and we're like Ditko nerds, and he was like, you know, she was created by Ditko, and I was like, no way, right? Pointed out the issues, and I was like, oh, okay, I clearly missed that era, because she appeared in like an Iron Man story with and it was like, okay, by the armor I could tell this is like some late 80s early 90s Iron Man, and I totally skipped that era, I guess, and
right.
But I was like, hey, you know what, it's another opportunity to draw something by Ditko, so, you know, and it's that and Doctor Strange, you know, and Spider-Man, so I was like, check those off, I'll have to draw this now, like Cat or something, you know?
Yeah, got your covers, or what's been released, up on my laptop over here. And we were talking briefly before show that you were born in South Korea, now live in Canada. When you got to the cover for Totally Awesome Hulk. Did some national pride come out with that?
I got to talk with Axel Alonso about that because his wife is Korean, and I'm a Cho, and the Hulk is like a Cho, and Frank Cho is drawing it, right? So I was like, hey, this is really cool. You know, I got to do a Hulk piece, and he happens to be a Korean one, and I was like, and he's also a genius, so like I was like, you know, there's everything's cool about this job, so that's why I drove really happy. Plus, it's a book called Totally Awesome Hulk, not like Incredibly Raging Hulk or something.
I want to read this book because the whole concept of somebody who actually wants to be Hulk, because Banner was all tortured about it, except for the time when he was Mr. Fix It, but that's a whole other separate thing. But I'm like, you know what, if I could turn big and green, as long as I was sentient, I'd be fine.
Yeah, as long as you could like control yourself, right?
Yeah, you know, I'd be cool. I'm like, oh yeah, hey, big green, what you gonna say? Now, excuse Kyle, me while I jump over the lake.
Now, Kyle, I gotta get your opinion. You've seen the different covers, right? That have been released.
Yes.
Top three favorites.
My top three favorites, and at now, let me make sure.
No particular order.
No particular order. Okay, hang on a second here. I'm gonna pull it up again because I had. I want to make sure that I'm looking at the current ones and not any that were like concept. Hang on a second. It'll just be a moment because I can't. There we go.
I'm not sure how old mine. The story I have that's got. I don't know.
See.
How
old. Oh. Okay. Now you get. Why you have to ask me this hard question? Okay. All right. In no particular order.
Yeah. The story I have is from November 4th, so.
Okay. Okay. In no particular order.
No particular order.
Daredevil.
Okay.
Spidey. This is a tough one. Let's go with Avengers.
Okay. Right off the bat, Uncanny Inhumans. Love it. Love the look, especially with, I can't think of her name, but with the hair.
Medusa.
Medusa with her hair whipping across the top. Amazing Spider-Man number 7. Because it's almost got that 1977 TV show pose to it.
Is
what I saw.
Yes.
Michael smiling big time on that one.
Yes.
So is that what you were going for with that one?
No, just that. Yeah, it's just a hodgepodge of Spider-Man memories. Yeah, the only reservation I had was like, I like the new suit redesign, but I wish he kept the, I wish I got to draw Spider-Man in his old classic Ditko suit.
And then the last one, I'm kind of torn between, see, this is tough. The last one's tough, cause I like the Spider-Gwen. I like, the Mighty Thor, but I gotta go Old Man Logan.
Ooh, as well, dude,
because that's just got some nice grit to it. I love the facial look that she threw in there,
dude. You know how hard that was. Man, why couldn't we just make it 5? If you made it 5, that'd make it easier on me. Not much easier, but a little bit easier.
Yeah, but we don't do things easy around here.
No, we don't. No,
that's why we have the above ground, underwater, suborbital volcano lair.
York, that's true. You know, and I love having to explain that to people, but yet it now completely makes sense to me.
So, besides the variant covers, what else are you currently working on for Marvel?
I literally have to put the brakes on everything and just draw these. Like, I haven't been able to do anything else for the last, since early September. So, I normally do spend, like, you know, most of my time doing illustration assignments, and I've been trying to finish off a second graphic novel of my own. But when this job came along, I was like, well, I'm going to have to clear out my schedule because, you know, it's going to be 3 months of me just drawing superheroes nonstop, which is great because, I mean, you know, I wake up every day and I go, okay, what am I drawing today? And I'm going to spend all day drawing, you know, Captain Marvel or something. So, and then the next day you move on and draw, you know, Hawkeye. So it's been really nice.
Oh, I can't wait to see the Hawkeye cover.
I have a question, and maybe I'm reading into this, but I'm looking at the Doctor Strange cover, and I sort of get a Vincent Price feel from that. Is that something you were going for? before or no?
All I have in mind is like just classic Ditko Doctor Strange. And the redesign is really close, right? It's actually a redesign. It's all it does is just tweak the elements a little bit. And so I really liked that it was a freshening up of the costume without, you know, putting him in a trench coat or something with a hat.
I'm glad they didn't do that. That sort of tends to be the thing now, you know, but I'm glad that they didn't do that with Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I think the 90s are over, so he's not going to have any pouches, I don't think, on his shoulders or anything like that, you know? So I like the modern superhero designs, like Captain Marvel's redesign is fantastic, you know?
Yes.
I don't know who redesigned it, who the artist was, but when I saw that, I was like, that's a military uniform, you know? And it's sexy without being a big TNA kind of, you know, thing where it's like no self-respecting warrior woman would wear that.
And you know, I think that, you know, they're sending the message that it is possible to be functional and feminine at the same time. Yeah, that makes sense.
And especially with the increase in readership for women as well. Yes. You know, you like, I like the fact that when I see the new redesigns, it's like, hey, you know, there's a fresher outlook here rather than the same old redesigns for the same you know, that old audience of established comic fans. You can see, you know, a new take coming in that's like a breath of fresh air.
Exactly.
It's almost like that one line from Vin Diesel in XXX. Yeah, I knew it was fake because no self-respecting waitress would be wearing heels in a diner like this.
Exactly.
So,
well, I think my wife actually started reading Captain Marvel with the launch of the new series, and I think that was one of the things that she liked about it, was that, you know, looking at the character of Carol Danvers, that you know, she and looking at what she's wearing, like I said, it's a military uniform, and it's not that whole typical what we were all used to seeing, so
and I think it's like it's sleek, you know, it's form fitting, but and so it hits all the right notes for me, and the design was just great. So I was like, oh, this is a joy to draw, you know. There's no pouches on her.
Now, has there been any covers that you've done where the editors have come back and said, kind of might want to redo?
No, I have to hand it to Marvel for giving me that flexibility, because usually when I do this many of anything, something comes back and they go, well, you know, can you do a second take on this because we don't like this concept, or there was, you know, something that I got wrong or something. And instead they were more than supportive. They kept egging me on to do to handle more of the design myself, so, and give it my own spin from the beginning, because early on I didn't even want to do the typography. I just wanted to do like an iconic image, and then they would put the character, the standard logo on top. And instead, you know, Tom Brevoort was just great, and he just said, no, we want you to handle it yourself, you know, and if you want, you can design your own type. And I was kind of wary of that, but then I had an idea. I was like, well, wait a minute, if they're going to give me that much freedom, I'm going to make these look like movie posters or soft cover, you know, paperback books. And I thought they would turn it down for sure, and instead they went for it. And every time I've come up with an idea that I said, they're going to turn this down, they were like, that's great. So, you know, I really have to hand it to them for that. The only thing they caught me was a couple of spelling mistakes. I forgot the dash in Ant-Man, you know, and they were like, you know, can you redo that so that it says Astonishing Ant-Man? And I was like, oh, sorry.
Well, you know, that's important.
Yeah, you need that dash, apparently.
So I guess let's go back a little bit. What got you started in the business?
Illustration or just as in comics altogether?
Just to comics altogether, to become a comic professional.
Because I'm a geeky kid who read comics. I think that's like the standard bio and secret origin of everybody who draws comics, right? So, you know, I came to Canada when I was like 6 and a half, and I started reading comics immediately, because that was the culture that I kind of grew up with in South Korea. And so I'm a total child of, like, you know, 80s Marvel. all. I can like name, you know, I could if you show me a corner of a cover from that era, I could tell you exactly who inked it, who the letterer was, that kind of stuff, you know. So I remember as a kid, I wanted to be a cartoonist, and then I wanted to be an illustrator when I was a little older, and then when I was around 17, I wanted to be a fine arts painter, and then I went to art college, and I came out of art college, and I was a fine arts painter, and I was broke, so I became an illustrator, and then eventually I started getting into comics. So I really love doing comics. It just takes a lot more time than it does to do other illustration work.
Yeah, I know you mentioned a couple names, but who exactly were like inspirations?
Like childhood inspirations,
I guess inspirations that led to the type of art style that you're doing now or do on a. Or who inspired the Michael Cho style?
God, I don't know. I'm just an amalgamation of all my influences. It's sort of like all the stuff that I really liked all my life gets squeezed through my fingertips and comes out as me because I'm the blender, right?
Right.
You know. And so, when I was a kid, I loved liked Jack Kirby stuff a lot. I really love this stuff now. So that's where a lot of my superhero stuff comes from. It doesn't show up as much in these, but there's, you know, underneath it all is still a little Kirby, because whenever I draw superhero stuff, whenever I get stuck with a problem, I'm always thinking like, well, just Kirby it out, man, you know, and then it eventually fixes itself that way. I always liked David Mazzucchelli. He was great, you know, from as a teenager, I really respected his work because he was a top-notch superhero artist who also did indie work, you know, and he was great at both fields, and that's sort of the way I feel. I was always on the fence, you know. I love doing indie stuff, and I love, you know, just playing around with superheroes. And then, but the stuff that that makes up what I do now is really comes from a lot of older artists. Like, I'm a big fan of the 1930s, 40s adventure strip artists, like Frank Robbins, Roy Crane, you know, Alex Raymond, that era, and then the classic Silver Age guys like Wally Wood, Joe Kubert, Kirby, Ditko, and then the like more contemporary ones, I guess it's like Jaime Hernandez, I don't know, like Mike Allred, things like that.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of a lot of the old pulp heroes from the 30s and 40s. So that's one of the other things. I kept looking at the covers, and I kept feeling like I'm being pulled back there. Yeah. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I couldn't put my finger on it because, you know, I'm getting that 30s, 40s vibe, but it seems like a bit of the line work seems to be 60s-ish, but then the colors feel a little bit more, you know, maybe late 60s, 70s. Like you said, I'm getting the mix there. Was that something that, like, let's say when you first started drawing, would you happen to, maybe you're reading like one of those old Flash Gordon strips or whatever, and you're like, hey, let's try this, or,
dude,
you know.
No. When I first started drawing, all I wanted to do was to be John Byrd, you know? I was a child of the 80s, you know. I wanted to be John Byrd, and I wanted to be, let's see who else, Brett Breeding or something, you know? That era, maybe, you know, I wanted to have my stuff look like Bob Layton inked it, you know? so I'm that era, you know? When I went to art college, and then, you know, my mind was expanded as I grew up, and then when I started doing illustration work, one of the things that I realized right away was that I had this classic, I had a big background in comics, so I inked with a brush, and, you know, I could do a classic comics look, because that's the way I grew up, you know, right. That's the stuff I appreciated. So, and then I started gravitating more toward the retro stuff. Like, I'm a big fan of 50s illustration and limited color work that was very popular around that era, when, you know, magazine would just be printed in red and black or something. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of what informs what I do. You know, I always try to strip it down to just a few colors, and it comes from that era. You know, I'm I'm not very good with fancy Photoshop effects or anything like that. I like to keep, whenever I'm working, what I'm mostly thinking is, you know, just strip it down. How much more can I get rid of, you know?
Right.
Well,
I take it that you, like, being a fan of 80s comics and that sort of thing, especially Marvel, 80s Marvel, do you happen to remember G.I. Joe number 21?
No, I had the G.I. Joe number 1, that was the Herb Trimpe one, right, where they're jumping off the tank. Right, that was what printed on like Mando paper or something. I think, oh my god, I think I remember this. We're totally geeking out here. Well, what's in G.I. Joe 21?
G.I. Joe 21 was like the first issue. It was called the silent issue. There was no.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, there was like no dialogue.
Yeah.
In the entire issue, and you know, so you know, each so it was like, you know,
was it a down Trimpe? To the is that a Herb Trimpe or is that, I know it's like Larry Hama wrote that, right?
Yeah, Larry Hama wrote it. Trimpe may have. I'm gonna have to go back and look and see.
I'm checking now.
Yeah, but yeah, that one I remember. Like, I read that so many times that, well, if you consider an issue with no dialogue, reading it, but. The line work and the art itself just pulled me in. And there's like a pretty huge reveal at the end of the story that, and I go back and I look at it and I'm like, how in the world? I don't know if that could, not saying that it couldn't happen today, but comics are so different now. I don't know how well that story would go over.
Oh, I'm positive they could still do that today. Are you kidding? Like, one thing, every artist wants to do clever storytelling, you know, somebody stands out for the pack. And there are some really, really great storytellers, you know, guys that don't just, you know, break the script down, but rather are coming up with some telling a story that can only be told in comics, you know, page layouts that, you know, that are, like, there's comic artists that, that just try to do like a cinematic approach where they're making a film on paper. And then there's comic artists who sit there going, no, this is a medium unto itself and it has its own possibilities that you can't do, you know, like using the entire page layout or something. And when I see those types of artists, that's the stuff that I go, wow, that's amazing. Like that last run of Hawkeye, had some incredibly clever tricks. And
they
delighted in exploring the opportunities presented by the medium itself, telling a story a different way, you know. Or anything that Javier Pulido does is amazing because he's so clever with his layout. So you know, I think it would still go over because the comic readers are generally sophisticated, and they, especially long time readers, they've seen it all before, so they like seeing a new twist.
Right. Now, production crew for G.I. Joe 21, writer and penciler was Larry Hama.
Right.
Inker, Steve Leilola. Colorist, George Russo's.
Right. Inky Russo's.
And letterer was Rick Parker. Editors were Denny O'Neill and Linda Grant.
Yeah, and I remember, like, Steranko did a silent one, like an intro to a Nick Fury story in the 60s, which is what everybody references when they think about that type of storytelling.
Yeah.
Frank Miller, Lord knows, came up with a bazillion interesting things during his run on Daredevil.
Well, yes. when Steranko did it too, wasn't that he got paid for those pages? And back in the day, if there was no dialogue, the writer didn't get paid.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he was going, well, no, I still had to script it.
Yeah.
I'm still directing the scene.
Yeah.
It's the artist is still doing what I wrote should be done.
It's just writing is not just talking. Dialogue, you know. It's not just dialogue or caption, that's for sure.
So, well, tell you what, let's take a quick break. You're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks with Michael Cho as our special guest, and it's Mike and Kylan, and we'll be right back.
Cool.
Did you know that you can shop and support the Weepy Geeks Network at the same time? Every time you use the Amazon link to make purchases, such as a set of CAD Sessions MH510 headphones to listen to the Weeby Geeks Network podcast, a percentage of your purchase goes towards helping the network. So, to review, browse the page, click the link, shop, and repeat. Thanks, and keep listening.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Are you in the market for some new swag? Some comic themed merch? How about a Sweetwater keychain of your favorite villain or vigilante? Just hop over to the Weeby Geeks site and click the superhero stuff link and let the retail therapy commence. Using the link,
help support Weebie Geeks because they get a small commission from each sale at no extra cost to you. So get to shopping, and thanks for listening.
And welcome back. It is Mighty Marvel Geeks with Mike and Kylan this week, and special guest Michael Cho, the brilliant mastermind behind 21 variant covers that are coming out in February. We talked a little bit about, briefly, Hawkeye, how you loved the art styling of it. With their covers kind of being similar to what you're doing with your variants, what was your approach with Hawkeye without it looking very similar?
You know, I try not to think like that. What I do is I just try to draw what I think is appropriate, and then it comes out of my style. But you're right. There's certain illustrators whose work is similar to mine because we're all sort of working in similar thought processes. So I just try to draw the most iconic Hawkeye cover I could. The only requirement they had for that was they wanted both Kate Bishop, who was the new Hawkeye, and right. Barton, who is the Hawkeye I know, on the cover. So I was like, okay, well, cool. I'll come up with something that's like, you know, James Bondy kind of thing or something.
Okay.
A design poster, you know. So it's playing around with design thinking as well, because that's half of what my thought process is, you know. It's not just trying to come up with a cool pose or something, but it's like an overall layout that sort of expresses a concept.
Now, did you have to use the more modern Hawkeye, or were you allowed to use...
No, they gave me the reference, and I think it was kind of open ended as to what I could do, but they sent along the modern reference, so I might as well use that. And especially since there's a newer Marvel initiative now, right, with the launching of a lot of new books, it would make more sense for me to draw something in the current outfits. I'd love to draw that classic Hawkeye with the mask and everything like that. That would be awesome. I've actually drawn that once or twice. It's a great design, but I like the new design too.
If I ever see you at a convention, I might have to ask for that. It's a quick sketch.
All that classic Marvel stuff I could totally draw from memory, but like the 90s is where the cutoff is. So like, if you ask me to draw Gambit, I'm like, you better have some reference, because like that, I don't remember anything. He has that Flash Gordon thing going on.
Yeah, I love the old... Of course, I know most from the West Coast Avengers stuff. You know, the more Marvel classic Hawkeye.
Yeah.
With the purple suit, the horn mask. Yep. Loved it. Just absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
So
that's the design that I, you know, grew up with, you know. And that was like just a slight refinement of the 60s design, so that Don Heck came up with. So I love that design too.
Now, did you, with all your work with Marvel, did you ever get an opportunity where you saw a design and Marvel gave you the free reign of, you know, you could draw the character how you wanted type deal, and you made a change to a character just to fit it for the time you were doing it?
Like, yeah, for these covers, I did one or two slight tweaks, right? Because I thought the image was stronger if I just changed the design a little bit, right? And, you know, for Marvel, it's been great. They're very open-ended about that, because these are variant covers. It's not like I'm drawing some interior canon thing, right? So I did a Scarlet Witch cover that has a slight variation on the cover, just because it suited the design better. So, you know, but like, if you ever notice, like, you know, you one artist designs a character and then the next artist does a tweak, you eventually, you know, make it your own anyway. So the costumes, like, you get five artists to draw the same character, the costumes slightly different each time.
Okay. So what was the first project you ever had with Marvel?
Ever?
Yes.
Let's see. I think I drew an 8-page story for Age of the Century, which was a comic that was featuring the Century, it was written by Paul Tobin, and they had me do an issue because it was set in the 60s, in like 1962, and it was great because, you know, that's like, I love that era. So Paul Tobin said, we want to draw this, by the way, it's got a birthday party in it. And I said, oh, I'm there. It's a superhero birthday party scene. Great, you know, because I always loved those shots as a kid, you know, where all the superheroes are gathered and there's a big cake that's, you know, and you see the villains in the background talking with the superheroes, and you picture them as a kid. They're all friends and hanging out. And I got to draw a sequence like that. So in that one 8-page story, I think I got to draw like Spider-Man, Captain America, Nick Fury, the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, early Doctor Strange, the Hulk, everybody I wanted to draw in one shot. And that was the first Marvel thing I did. So I was like, this is great. I got to draw everything I ever wanted. You know?
Was it hard to not put Garrett Morris in as Ant-Man?
Yeah, Ant-Man does make an appearance as well. He flies around a cake. I remember that because I had to plan the shot with, like, and the Hulk eats he eats birthday cake, and then Johnny Storm gets like birthday cake on his face at the end. It was great. Paul Tobin wrote a great script, so definitely awesome. That was the best.
So outside the variant covers, what's been one of your favorite projects with Marvel?
I haven't done that much. Like, I mean, other than these covers, I did like maybe one or two shorts, you know, little short stories. The other one that I did that I really enjoyed was I did an X-Men First Class one with Jeff Parker, who wrote a great annual, and it had like I think it was a 5 or 6 page story in it that was set in the 50s, and he was doing them after he was writing these stories that were themed after classic sci-fi movies and featuring a different X-Men character. And the one he when he asked me to do it, he said, you know, would you draw this in two-tone like you normally draw? And I said, oh yeah, absolutely, like a black and white movie. And then I don't know whether he thought of it or I thought of it, but we were both on the same wavelength that we should do The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is a classic, right? So it had Cyclops, and it had like a joke with Gort, the robot, and it had like, you know, the Klaatu, Dick Baratu, whatever the code word to activate or deactivate him was. So that one was a fun one as well. So, you know, I've had fun on those types of things.
Okay. Now, I guess expanding outside of Marvel as well, what's been one of the weirdest projects you've ever been asked to do?
Nothing I can say on a family rated show. I started my career as an illustrator drawing. I was in my 20s, right? So I'm like, I'm older now and I have a daughter, so I would not accept this now. But back when I was younger, my thing was, you know, like, well, I just want to draw anything that's crazy. So the crazier the better, you know. If you gave me 2 illustration jobs and they were like, you know, equal pay and equal complexity or whatever, and one was crazy and stupid, I would take that one, you know. So I've drawn some sort of for the tame term would be risque, and the correct term would be like porno, basically, you know, type of drawings for books. Like I illustrated a book that had like 4 or 5 pretty hardcore kind of images like that. And wow. When someone finds that and they bring it to me at a show, I'm always like, oh jeez, dude, I wish, where did you get this, you know? Oh my god, you know, like, please don't tell anyone, you know. So
it's almost like Ethan Van Sciver and his Cyber Frog.
He did a Cyber Frog book or something?
Yeah, it was his own title.
See, I'd be more proud of Cyber Frog, I think, you know, because maybe you could show that to people more, you know, but you definitely can't share this.
I'm going to make the judgment call now. I have no problem saying, you know, that you did pornographic potential work. You know, one, it was work. You know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But,
and, you know.
But then again, look at the original Jessica Jones stuff as well.
Exactly.
I mean, it was the most risque book that Marvel ever put out. Yeah. That's why everyone is going, what is going to happen with Netflix when that show releases this weekend?
I have no history with Jessica Jones at all. Like, so.
Yeah, Jessica Jones was Marvel had decided to come out with an imprint called Max, and so there was so the comics code, it was basically these books were going to be printed without the comics code, and it was going to be strictly mature adult material in it. And so Jessica Jones's story Alias was the first story to come out of this.
Yeah.
But is that the genesis of the character, or did she exist before?
That was the genesis of the character, and the character got so popular they ended up retconning her into the Marvel universe. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on and very little is left to the imagination.
Well, right. First page, first issue, the F word 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the first word.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe
the book.
So. Because I think I remember reading this. I'm like, oh, I'm edgy. I got a book without the comic code, not open it up. And then, yeah. And I'm like, I think my jaw hit the floor. But edgy, it's a great book. I mean, the whole story is amazing. Well written. Yeah, but
the whole story.
Just be ready.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
Like in my defense, like when I was drawing this stuff into my early 20s, it was only a couple assignments. And they were all done in a, like, it wasn't violent or anything like that. It was all very positive, and you know, it was just happened to be like, you know, lots of nudes basically. So you know, I think in my 20s, it was all a learning experience. Like I spent most of my time back then like trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I was trying to try everything, you know, whatever was available in illustration, I wanted to try it. And then as I got older, I started contracting that as I figured out what I liked doing, you know.
I'm gonna guess you're probably no older than Kylan and myself. We're both mid-40s.
I'm younger than that. So
But even still, late. I'm assuming around late 90s. You were doing this type of stuff. Early 2000s.
Yeah. That's around when I started.
That's when the culture. I mean, books like that wasn't uncommon though.
Yeah.
No, it
yeah.
wasn't. No. And every comic shop had a little section.
Yeah.
You know.
But also when you're in your 20s, you're trying to be edgy. And, you know, you want to be like this underground type of artist or something, and then as you get older, you have a family, you know.
So, right,
things change.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want people finding that kind of stuff, you know, and bringing it to me at my table while my daughter is there or something.
Can you open up to the full the 2-page break? Can you sign across here? wait till my daughter goes to the bathroom. So how many conventions do you, since we're talking about shows and conventions, how many conventions do you usually do during a year?
Well, last year and the year before that, I think I did like about like an average of maybe 5 or 6 or something like that, maybe 5. I don't do that many, you know, and when my daughter was born, I really cut down. Right, where I only did stuff that was local or within like an hour flight or something. I didn't want to be on the West Coast and, you know, take a 7-hour plane ride and be gone for like a week or something. So
definitely a frequent guest of Fan Expo.
Totally, yeah. Back in the day, I haven't done it in a few years, but yeah, definitely Fan Expo was because and in Toronto we also have another one, TCAF, which is an indie comic fest, which is great, you know, and it's downtown, so and it's free admission to everybody, and I love that show.
How often do you get free admission to a show?
Probably just that one. You get people who come in off the street, who you know, who just it's just a general audience, so
right,
it's great.
When is that one?
That one is
I try to plan a trip.
Yeah, TCAF is in May, like the first week of May. It hits the same weekend as Mother's Day. So I don't know if it's different in Canada or versus the U.S., but that's the one drawback. So, you know, you got to have taken your mom out for lunch like the week beforehand.
You know? Mom, we're going to take you out early. You know? Unless you want to go to the convention, hang out with a bunch of nerds.
Well, Mom, happy Mother's Day. Remember when you said comic books would rot my brain? Guess where we're going today? Comic book convention. You can see firsthand. I guess I think we briefly talked about it before show. What Marvel books are a must read for you in a month, or if you don't have any that you're consistently reading month after month, what 3 books from the past that our listeners might find in Marvel Unlimited that were ones that just stuck out to you?
I'll give you a mix. The ones I really like are currently Howard the Duck, which is written by Chip Starsky and drawn by Joe Quinone. Great artwork, great writing. You know,
yes.
That's just amazing. And then there's Squirrel Girl, which I think I've talked at length about, because that's just a fantastic book. I was showing it to my daughter, and you know, and it's rare to find a book that you laugh at the in jokes while your daughter can also laugh at as well, just yeah. on a, and it's just dynamite. So those are the two current ones, and I'll give you something straight from my brain right off the top of the dome here for your Marvel Unlimited pick, and it would be a classic issue of Iron Man, because I am totally an Iron Man nerd, and I'm going to say the original run, issue 150, and it's because it's my favorite era of Iron Man, and it's written by David Michelin. I don't remember how to pronounce his name, because I would only see it written. I'd never heard it spoken. John Romita Jr. draws it, and Bob Lane inks it, and the story is Iron Man and Dr. Doom go back to King Arthur's Camelot and fight it out. So it's a classic. It's like the 150th issue, so it's a double-sized issue. It has an army of undead. It has Morgan Le Fay. It has Iron Man joining the Knights of the Round Table. And Doctor Doom, you know, so it's just badass.
Yep, they have it.
Yeah, classic childhood favorite. I read that to death. It's one of the few comics I went to the comic shop again as a grown up to find and purchase again. So I found it in the 50-cent bin, but nevertheless, it's a total classic.
Okay, yeah,
check it out. That run is awesome. All the issues running up to that, those were the first comics I read. But that one was the capper when I was a kid and I think I picked up Iron Man as one of my first comics, you know, and when it got to that issue, I was like, oh, it's on, you know.
And I am adding it to my library right now.
Early great John Romita Jr. work as well, you know.
Like, yeah, yeah.
From his early years in Marvel. Great stuff.
Yeah. I guess speaking of Iron Man briefly, what's your take of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the movies?
I haven't watched the TV shows much because I don't get much time to watch TV, but the movies are awesome. I haven't seen a bad one yet, and I'm a little older now, but man, if I was 12, I would be wetting my pants at each one of these things, because you know they're the ones you wanted to see when you were a kid, and you're like, oh, if only they would make a Captain America movie, that would just be like as good as Star Wars, you know, this is it, you know? And I think I was hooked from the first Iron Man movie, right, because that was great. And I went into that thinking, you know, I wasn't having many expectations, but afterwards I was like, oh my god, they did this dead right, you know. And then the one that's my favorite is that second Captain America one, Winter Soldier, which I think is one of the few movies that's like I've seen like more than a few times, and whenever I watch it I go, man, this is just the perfect Captain America, you know. And the Bucky is the Winter Soldier, the action scenes, it's just dynamite.
I agree.
Yeah.
My top three are the first Captain America, then Winter Soldier, and then Guardians.
Oh, really?
Tied Guardians and Avengers.
I liked the first Captain America movie, but there were moments in there where I was like, you know that montage where they show you like Captain America like fighting the giant tank and everything like that? Yeah. It's like this little scene. I was like, why didn't we get more of that? You know? So when I went into the second one, I was like, oh, we got more of that. You know? So
well, I keep pitching. And Kylan's going to start rolling his eyes when I say this. I want a Howling Commandos TV show, be it cartoon,
live action. With you.
Well, would that
I'm
be
right
like
there with you, man.
Like, that's a budget thing. Instead of being like, that's a lot of money to do a period thing. I guess if they do it with Agent Carter, but like to about a war show,
right.
You know?
I have no problems seeing it go to Netflix.
How about there was a 10-part miniseries like, you know, like Band of Brothers or something like that?
I'd
be happy with that.
I would. Oh, please. Just.
I mean.
Oh, you know what? I watched the Daredevil show. That was great, too. That was an excellent show.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't wait for Jessica Jones this weekend.
Yeah, is that when it drops? Is it this weekend?
Tomorrow. We're recording this Thursday night into Friday. It actually drops later today, being Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So,
I'll check it out.
So, I guess, Kylan, you've got our unlimited pick for the week. What do you got for us?
I have, because I've changed it several times, and thanks to Mike, he made me want to go back to a bit of my Iron Man days. And let's go with the first Iron Man book I ever bought. Iron Man number 156.
Okay, I'm trying to remember what that one was. It's not Whiplash. It's the Unicorn.
It's the Mahler Mandate. This guy had this... It wasn't an armor, but it was sort of like a power suit.
Right, okay. David Mitchell, Tom Romita Jr., and Bob Layton, right?
That is correct. Yeah. Yes. And I had gone to a convenience store because where I grew up didn't have a comic shop. And that book right there, I'm like, oh, hey, that's Iron Man. Oh, hey, there's a guy in a power suit. They're fighting. That's all I needed. And yeah. You get Tony Stark. You get some crazy guy with hopes of taking on Iron Man. You get Rhodey.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah,
I got everything I needed, and it's a self-contained story on top of that. So, Iron Man 156.
Good era.
That is my pick.
Good pick.
So, well, it is that time that our listeners enjoy. Hopefully, they enjoy every week. I know we have fun with it. And we're going to carry Michael along on this journey and love to get his feedback on our new Comic Book Day picks of the week. So let's get right into it. I think Michael's going to love the song that goes with it as well. As soon as I can find it. Oh, come on. There we go.
And right, now that's again, gonna be in my head as I go to the coffee shop.
And again, this is for new Comic Book Day, the day before the American Thanksgiving, because the Canadian Thanksgiving was about 3 weeks ago. It was in October, correct?
Yeah, right.
Turkey's eating.
It's what we call Columbus Day, or Indigenous Peoples Day, depending on what part of the country you're in.
Oh, okay.
Well, I know the Canadian Pavilion at Epcot, they fed all of us in the pavilion a Thanksgiving meal. Oh, nice. That was good. This is going to be for Wednesday, November 25th, 2015. And Kylan, why don't you start off with your first pick?
Okay, let us start off. My number one is a number 12. In honor of the epic episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, I picked S.H.I.E.L.D. number 12. The writer is Mark Waid. The penciler is Mike Perkins. Cover artist is Julian Totino Tedesco. Thanks to an all-out battle between gods and earthlings, our planet has been wiped clean by the Scarlet Centurion. Coulson and his team have one chance to leap back in time and save the world. But to do so, they'll have to wage war on Asgard. Yeah, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, we do that stuff before breakfast.
I do that before I go to the bathroom in the morning.
See?
Okay. my first pick of the week, and I believe this is, it's a number 4, and I believe it's 4 out of 5. I think this is just a 5-issue run. It's Chewbacca number 4. The writer is Jerry Duggan. Cover artist is Phil Noto. And who else does... I'm looking at the description from Marvel.com. Best way to put it, because I can't do it justice without going... And I think that's about what it says on the screen as well. I mean,
awesome.
Literally no joke. I mean, if you get a chance to go to marvel.com, go to comics in their calendar. I mean, it's right there. It's Chewbacca lingo.
With, like, a word balloon.
No, it's their description. It's just Wookiee talk. Oh. Well, I've got a Chewbacca soundbite. We'll just play it instead. So, your number 2 pick.
My number 2 pick is, and this is one of the few times you will ever hear me utter these words, Hell Hydra number 4.
I almost went with that one.
Yeah, you know, I feel a little dirty even just saying that, but Hail I digress. Hail Hydra! I was waiting for that. The writer is Rick Remender. Cover artist is Andrew Robinson. Escape Impossible. Nomad versus the Hydra Avengers. Nuff said. And I think that the intern did not get paid by the word for that one.
Probably not.
Just saying.
So you were saying that was...
Hail Hydra. Hail Hydra!
Yeah, okay. Pretty much.
My number two pick is, again, there's a theme with my first two picks. Darth Vader number 13. I think I have, except for one issue, I have almost gone every issue of Darth Vader.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, it is a great series. Writer is Karen Gillian. Cover artist is Mark Brooks. It's the first crossover of Star Wars' new Marvel age. It continues here, because this is, I believe, the second book of Vader Down, which Vader Down came out this week. It's Vader versus all the rebels. It's not a fair fight. And I actually have a quote from Darth Vader about this book.
You cannot escape your destiny.
Oh, that's not Vader.
You may dispense with the pleasantries, Commander.
So, yeah, that's...
You've got a heck of a soundboard at the secret headquarters here.
Oh, we try. You definitely can't go wrong. When the soundboard has
Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, cause Ultron Funk gon' give it to you, cause Ultron Funk gon' give it to you, cause Ultron Funk gon' give it to you. Avengers assemble and fight it down. It's the Age of Ultron.
That eliminates the comic book shop song.
In a good way or a bad way.
So, I guess we're going into our final picks of the week. Michael, what do you think of our picks so far?
I think it expresses your innermost nerdery. So, your part, Mike, I think the geek is strong within you. And Kylan, make yours Marvel, man. You know, I totally wholeheartedly agree with your Iron Man pick, and your allegiance to Hydra is well noted now.
Oh no! There's no allegiance to Hydra. It's just I had Shield, so I had to put Hydra with it. It's sort of like a gift set.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, it's a balancing, yeah. Definitely.
Yes, you know. No, it's sort of like you have the salt and the pepper. So,
you don't have a pin for Hydra on your lapel or anything like that?
I do not actually.
He's got that mixed shirt where it looks like Shield until it glows in the dark, then it's Hydra.
I see. So you're a sleeper.
Was it last month? It may have been last month or 2 months ago. Loot Crate box was villains, and there's a big old Hydra pin. I didn't even touch the thing, and my wife's like, "Ooh!" I said, "It's yours. I don't even want it." I have a Shield wallet. I have a Shield cover on my cell phone.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like. No, I have one. I don't even eat squid. That's how much I don't like Shield. I don't like Hydra. I don't know.
I feel like I missed out on the music bed for this little section. So I'll play the little snippet now.
Okay. I knew you were gonna do it. I knew you were. I feel like I should have like a backpack and be like hitchhiking as I'm walking down a highway, you know?
The composer should have after the wrong notes that are about to happen. Like right there. So your number three pick.
My number three pick is a number eight. Secret Wars, number eight. The writer is Jonathan Hickman. The penciler is Isad Ribic. And the cover artist is Alex Ross. Genesis. And that's all I got. I'm serious. It just says Genesis.
Must be a new batch.
I'm waiting for Exodus to be next. I don't know.
Secret Wars, number nine. Leviticus.
Exactly. I was
like, Deuteronomy. Yeah.
Like, are we going through Old Testament lessons now? I don't know.
Oh, that's okay. Mine's a little more wordy, if that phrase is the right phrase to go with. My last pick of the week is Groot number six.
Oh, no.
Writer is Jeff Loveness. Penciler is Brian Kissinger. Cover artist is Declan Shalvey. Rocket and Groot reunited. What more do you need? And that's it. Apparently, that's all you need for the description.
Well, or the superfluous, really.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. Well, at least they say I have Groot.
Well, The other ones I tend to pick each month is a Squirrel Girl, and they've got some great descriptions each month. Like one month it was eats nuts and kicks butts.
Yep.
And then for what, 2 months in a row, they made reference to the squirrel Norse god, which actually exists.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember, so, like in the first issue, they did the Spider-Man theme song as Squirrel Girl, and it was stuck in my head for days. So Ryan North, I thank you for, you know, ruining my showers and my walks as I hummed that song.
Squirrel Girl does whatever a squirrel does.
It's like it's got powers of squirrel, yeah. And girl.
if you're wanting showers ruined, I could give you this Spider-Man theme song.
Classic. So this is the French Spider-Man?
Yeah, in French.
Wow. my you know, kind of compulsory Canadian education in French helped me a little bit.
If you're going to insult someone, you have to insult them in English and in French, sir.
So what do they call him in French? Monsieur Acne or something like that? What? I guess it's too hard to rhyme or something, right?
No. Oh, you were talking about soundboards. I have one whole page that's nothing but like cartoon TV theme songs, like the 77 Spider-Man we played earlier. I've got like the 66 Captain America cartoon, the 66 Iron Man cartoon.
Captain America throws his mighty shield.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Those are the hosts we must deal.
Yes.
The Iron Man.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's cool.
Incredible Hulk. The 1967 Fantastic Four. Amazing how it changes from this in 66 to this in 67. The difference of a year.
The 67 Fantastic Four is, what is that? Is it Filmation or is it Hanna-Barbera?
I bet Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, where the great Alex Toth is doing the designs.
Yeah.
And then the early Iron Man cartoon and the Captain America ones that you played are the ones where they basically took comics and then just cut out the images and everything like that.
Yeah.
I saw those in French as a kid because they didn't play them on my regular Canadian stations because it was just such low quality, I guess, or something. Right. And I remember, like, for years singing the Incredible Hulk theme song as Incroyable Hulk. They called him in French.
Well, I remember watching the first Iron Man movie, and they played that song for Tony Stark as he comes out on stage, and I'm like, I'm like geeking out, like, how many of these people actually remember this or even know about it? But like, I see what y'all did there,
So, well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week. Michael, we appreciate you coming on, and definitely can't wait for February with all your covers coming out.
Oh, yeah. I will be stalking my comic shop. I cannot wait. Cannot wait.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been fun geeking out and you know, reliving some hilarious childhood memories and especially nudging parts of my brain that I forgot many of those songs.
And now you won't be able to sleep without, I don't know.
No, I'll be hearing a Tony Stark Iron Man song all night.
Followed by a comic book shop.
YouTube, try to find that right now.
and as you're going to your comic book shop, you're going to be going, comic book shop.
Oh, they'll be singing that comic book song. Yeah, that comic book shop song.
So, well, that's going to wrap it up this week. Jarvis, if you would, please.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Nope, just time to go dark. Yeah, one of the other theme songs that I have on here is the old Spider-Woman cartoon.
Oh, the was that NBC one? It was sort of,
I think so.
Yeah, I remember that. That was actually a pretty decent show. From what I remember of it anyway.
Did you watch Spider-Man and his amazing friends with Firestar and Iceman?
Iceman, yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was what I watched, yeah.
And yeah, they sort of attempted a spin-off because they introduced the X-Men.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. With Wolverine shish kebabbing something. And,
And he had that really weird accent.
Okay. Well, I think it's weird, though. The one cartoon, or the two cartoons that have had almost the most runs up until the X-Men craze was Spider-Man and Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
but that all changed when Bruce Timm did the Batman series.
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.